Accession number 13122, Drundinin, Rail 7.
Mr. Dinin, Rail 7, we were talking about the period while you were building up this airstrip at Keflavik. Would you get the opportunity as an officer, or would the men get a chance as well, to go on leave, local leave, in Iceland, either to the sites or into Reykjavik? Because you've been there over a year by this time.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have any local leave, but I did. I was sent on a course to England. And I went down to the small arms school in the south of England.
Where, at Hythe?
Yes.
It is
at
Hythe.
At Hythe, which covers special courses for all the small arms, which I hadn't done previously.
And you were sent from the Keflavik?
Yes.
For Keflavik.
And
what was the course like? What do you remember of it?
Well, it was mainly training in small arms fire, which I happened to like. And
which particular weapons were you concentrating on?
Yes. Mainly on rifles and machine guns. The Vickers machine guns.
What did you think of the Vickers? Because it was a First World War gun.
Yes, it was termed rather old-fashioned. But at that time, the army were very short of weapons, as we were still 1941, still without the necessary arms to carry out any kind of war. So it was a question of getting used to these weapons and the introduction of the Bren gun, which was new to me. So it was quite a good course and I quite enjoyed it.
So the battalion had had Brens, but you hadn't been trained in the use of
yes,
them?
Yes, correct.
What did you think of the Vickers and the Bren?
Well, the Vickers, I had seen them, but not handled them myself. Previously, and I thought they were very good. Not quite as accurate as the Bren gun, of course. They give a more scattering effect when you fired them, whereas the Bren gun was a much more accurate gun.
What about reliability of the two guns? Stoppages, well, things like that.
Yes, the Bren gun actually was streets ahead of the Vickers when it came to the actual working of the gun. There were very, very few stoppages with the Bren gun. But with the Vickers machine gun, there was quite often stoppages which had to be put right. Could have been at the most awkward of times. So I think the Bren gun really was the good replacement.
Did the Vickers have any advantages that you could see? It was heavier as well, wasn't it?
It was much heavier to transport about. Whereas the Bren gun, a lighter machine altogether, and easily carried by a man and a partner carrying the ammunition.
So as far as you could see, although you thought the Vickers was all right, it didn't have any advantage over the Bren at all?
No, I don't think so. It was designed initially in terms of infantry warfare, and the system of the gun itself rather sprayed bullets as opposed to being a more accurate weapon like the Bren gun, who could pinpoint a target and get very close to it.
So the Vickers was more suited to, say, shooting down a line of men.
Yes.
Whereas the
it would cover an area that the Bren gun couldn't do.
The Bren would, say,
pick out one single target.
Like a pillbox or something.
Yes. Yes.
What about, were you introduced to any of the newer handheld submachine guns? I'm thinking of Sten's Thompson machine guns, Tommy guns. Did you?
Oh, yes, they were all part of the programme, getting introduced to the handguns.
What did you think of the Sten and the Thompson, the Tommy gun?
The Tommy gun was just newly arrived from America. I think that's where most of them came from. They, again, were very accurate and a much more modern type of gun. And although at that time there were very few in the army.
Had the Sten come in then, or was that during that course? I mean,
I hadn't handled the Sten until I went on that course. And
what did you think of the Sten?
It was very good for a mass-produced gun. Rather simple mechanism. Easily transported, no problems at all. And fitted into the situation very, very quickly.
Now, you said it was very good for a mass-produced gun.
Yes.
That implies that it did have some fault. It may have been minor, but...
Didn't have the finish of the things like the Vickers gun, which was all perfectly machined, whereas...
How did it compare to the Thompson?
There was no real comparison, really. It was the Thompson submachine gun was a really polished article, whereas the Sten was rough by comparison.
So the Thompson was a better gun?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think so, yes.
Would the Sten ever let you down with it being perhaps not so mechanically...
Yes, occasionally you would get a stoppage with the Sten gun, which you wouldn't get with the Thompson.
Any other infantry weapons that you were introduced on the course? Anything else?
Well, there was the anti-tank gun, which was had been recently introduced.
This is not the boys' rifle, the old one. It was the boys' rifle.
The boys' rifle, yes. It was rough and ready. Not very reliable, really. And I don't think the soldiers liked it very much.
Anything else?
I can't think of anything else.
You wouldn't do grenades, would you, on that course? Or would
no,
you?
We didn't. I don't recall ever using grenades there. We used grenades for training within the battalion, but not at the small arms school.
So you wouldn't see any of the newer grenades that were starting to come in at that?
Oh, we were shown them. We were shown all the very latest armaments being issued at that time.
What sort of thing?
These new grenades, different types of grenades, but we didn't actually use them.
What about the Piat?
No, we weren't trained in the Piat, as I recall, although we were issued them within the battalion.
Now, so you went off on this course. How long was the course for?
The course lasted 6 weeks, and we were able to cover most things and do quite a bit of personal shooting, which I enjoyed.
You liked shooting things like
yes.
the Sten?
Yeah.
Was it nice to be back in England after Iceland?
Oh, it was indeed. We were given a few days leave. Before joining the course, I had 2 days at home. And then after the course finished, we had to wait for a shipment back to Iceland, which gave us a few extra days leave.
Now, when you got back to Iceland, they'd still be at Keflavik, would they? The battalion?
Yes. The situation hadn't changed very much when we got back.
Had the Americans arrived at all? Because that was the ultimate plan. You were going to be replaced in Iceland by the American army.
We were actually almost adjoining an American camp. So we did see quite a bit of the Americans.
What did you think of them? How did you get on with them, officers and men?
Oh, they were very, very generous. Very generous people. There was no problems, as I saw, between the two factions.
No fighting?
No. There was quite good friendships built up, I think. And we often got invitations to join them to dinner, and the officers started.
Were they very different from you, the American officers? I mean,
we found a big difference in their etiquette.
In what way?
In the officers' mess. Theirs was on a much more friendly basis than the British type officers' mess, where we confirmed the normal rules of procedure. The Americans were much more casual in the approach between officers and senior officers.
What did you think of that yourself? I mean, did you like it or did you think it was wrong?
Oh, I personally didn't like it at all. I thought it was much too casual. For instance, at the end of a meal, it was nothing for the colonel to ask an officer to stand up and sing a song or tell a story, which was quite different to an officer's mess in the British Army.
But despite these differences, you got on well with them?
Oh, yes, extremely well. There were no problems at all.
So what happened next then? You were building this airfield, 8-hour shift, right round the clock, I mean, organised. What happened next?
Well, the next was no question of going back to our old camps. And then, as Christmas was approaching, we then were told that we would be going back to UK.
So you never were actually in Reykjavik itself?
No. I'd only been to Reykjavik once.
What did the troops think when they heard they were going back?
Oh, everybody was delighted. I think the soldiers as a whole didn't care for it and were only too happy to be going back home.
What hadn't they liked? Was it the weather, the Icelanders, or the lack of things to do, or the lack of fighting? What do you think it was?
I think, in the main, the soldiers preferred England and the closeness of their relationships with the local people, which they didn't have in Iceland. When they're at home, even if they're in a barracks, they're usually near a town or in a town, and they were able to take part in the normal routines of English life. I think that was probably the main thing.
So, you heard you were going back. What happened next?
Well, we actually packed up our camps and moved to Reykjavik to board ship. And we actually left on New Year's Eve.
1941. How did you feel yourself?
I was quite happy where I was working. I enjoyed Iceland. I didn't know what was going to be ahead of us. So it was some misgivings that we left Iceland.
What ship were you on this time?
Oh, God.
Doesn't matter. What type of ship?
It was a Polish ship we were on, and I think it was called the Polaris. We had a good crossing. We actually saw our escort, the destroyer, suddenly take off at all speed. And we learned afterwards that they'd sunk a submarine. And another thing that happened during that few days' voyage, I saw my first whale in the sea. It's quite a sight. We had, quite a pleasant crossing. No problems.
And where did you land?
We landed in Scotland at Gourock. And then we were all dispatched on a 7-day leave. And we took up accommodation then, afterwards at Carmarthen in Wales.
Carmarthen?
Yes.
What sort of accommodation was that? Is there a barracks at Carmarthen?
There was not a barracks. It had been part of a big estate. We had a big country house, which had obviously been the owner's residence, which was very cold, no heating. The soldiers were housed in what had been very quickly erected huts in the grounds of this estate.
And what were you doing?
We then started on doing normal infantry training because we received reinforcements.
Were the reinforcements mostly Durham men or Northumberland?
No, they were a mixture. We had a mixture of reinforcements because the county regiments were all earmarked. And many of them were away abroad.
Did these reinforcements dilute the quality of the regiment that you'd known, or were they just as good?
Oh, I think they fitted in very well. I don't think there was any animosity within the unit. They were just accepted as soldiers and all seemed to get on well together.
What kind of training were you doing?
We did mostly normal company training at first, and then got on to battalion training because the countryside was well suited, and we were able to do exercises from this situation within easy reach of transport, etc. And actually it became an ideal spot for an infantry company. Yes.
Just to put something right, it's not Carmarthen, it's Carmarthen. I'd misheard you, sorry.
That's correct.
Which is a different place entirely. So you were doing these exercises. Would these be in the mountains behind there? Or?
Yes. The exercises at that time were really brigade exercises. So we were mixed with the other battalions, like the 11th DLI and the Tyneside Scots. And these would take place in the surrounding countryside, which was very hilly and was agricultural land and quite suitable in a way to battalion training.
had any of the new training ideas, like this battle drill concept and battle schools, come along?
Yes. The battle drill had just been introduced.
Could you explain what battle drill was as a training concept?
Well, it was a set drill of platoons, down to platoon level, which was a good idea in a way that it gave you a basic training in movement and doing attack drill and defensive drill, which meant that whatever unit you were with, the soldiers would have been trained in that self-same way.
What sort of thing, what sort of thing was it?
Just to learn attack and defence of any sized unit, whether it was at platoon level or company level.
Did it have any unifying principles that you can remember?
Well, the pattern of the basic platoon drill was based on the method of one section forward and the use of pincer movements. This was a good thing in a way, because the same drill applied to at company level as well as platoon level. So that if an officer was moved about, at least he knew that the troops would understand the battle drill, because all the units were trained in the same manner.
So just as at platoon level, one section would hold the front while the other two sections did a pincer.
Yes.
So in a sense, at the company level, one platoon would hold while the other two...
That's correct, yes. That was the system.
Now, this is a concentration on encircling, pincering, holding, not on frontal attacks. Would that be correct to say?
Yes, yes. We moved away from the frontal attack system completely.
Was this the first time you'd come across this, or had this been happening slowly?
No, this was introduced by General Montgomery, I think. I'm right in saying, about 1942, it was introduced for the first time into the British Army. It had never been done before.
So this was new. This whole idea of always going round if you could was new.
Yes. General Montgomery was obviously very much taken with this idea and got this introduced into the army. He started off in Southern Command, and it was spread through every division in the country.
Even while he was in North Africa himself?
No, he just returned from North Africa, and he was so much taken with it that it became very quickly introduced into every battalion. And we just carried on.
Were there any other principles of this battle drill, other than anything else you remember about it?
No, I think that just that simple introduction.
I've been told that everyone was taught what everybody else in a platoon. Everyone was taught what everybody else's role was and who was carrying what. Would that help?
That was well. That would come under normal infantry training. In any case.
So that wasn't special or new to battle drill. That's just a misguided impression.
Yeah.
What about the battle schools? You know.
Yes, the battle schools were introduced, I think, in 1942 also. In actual fact, I was sent on to a course at Barnet Castle with the idea of becoming an instructor in battle school training.
Now, who was running this Barnard Castle course? Was there a battle school there?
There had been a battle school started there, and most units in our division had to send people on courses there.
Now, what was this course like? What were they teaching you there?
Well, this was to introduce you, really, to more real conditions. We used live ammunition, for instance, in our exercises.
How was that controlled to avoid casualties? Or?
Well, their staff, instructors, would have a set piece of a situation, either a defensive situation or an attack situation, and live ammunition would be used to give the real effect of battle situations.
Would they be firing on direct line, on fixed lines, presumably, or?
Well, for a demonstration, for instance, we had one morning were taken out into a field and set into a rectangle. I think there were about 60 of us sitting on a slight hillside, and we were told we were going to be shown the full extent of the Bren gun. Unfortunately, when the demonstration started, the users of the Bren gun had not warmed the guns up before the demonstration started, with the result, when the signal was given to open fire with the Bren guns, the first shots that were fired ended up within the ranks of the people sitting in the rectangle. And I was astonished to see my neighbour fall forward, another man behind me fell, and I think in the whole exercise, some 3 people were killed. And I don't know how many received wounds, as we were very quickly removed from the area and taken onto a different situation. This came as a shock to everyone, I think.
Did they accept that there'd be casualties in this sort of exercise?
Well, as I understand it, the War Office, in war conditions, would accept 5% casualties without any inquiry.
In training?
In training.
Yes. That's an awful lot.
It is, indeed.
You just had 3 yes. I presume, and others wounded, so that was probably more than the 5%, but were these that sort of accidents common, do you think?
Oh, I think so, yes. When I left there, after a week or two, getting back to my unit, I was then posted to the 49th Division Battle School.
Before we go into that, was there anything else about the training at Barnard Castle you recall? Any other special things they were introducing you to?
No, I don't think so. They were just the normal things happened.
So the main thing that the battle schools were bringing in wasn't new tactics, or particularly new, it was more the use of live ammunition.
That's right.
To simulate. Yes,
that was the idea, though. To try and give you a picture of what a battle might be like.
And normally they'd warm the guns up first and they'd be firing at a specific point. And you'd have to, would they be crawling under it or things, or go?
Well, on that particular demonstration, it was to show you the accuracy of the Bren gun. And the guns were set to fire on exact correct lines. There were guns.
What was the target going to be?
The targets were fixed by flags forward of this rectangular situation. And the idea was to show you how accurate the Bren gun could be under normal conditions.